This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, now my first guest today says it takes just 20% of a population to overthrow a law or rule, which equates to around 11 million people in the UK if you strip out everyone under the age of 18, which is interesting. Because based upon the data that I've seen for the UK, I reckon around 20% of the UK's adult population refuse to take the government-backed poison. So what do you think? Would it be possible to get 11 million adults in the UK to come together under one idea? Not another political party, because let's be honest, our political system is part of the problem at the moment, but a movement outside of politics that will lead to change in people's collective actions. We've got all sorts of high-profile figures with huge platforms in the UK who use them to raise awareness. But would it be possible to get 11 million people to agree, just on one idea even? This is the question I will be putting, or one of the questions I'll be putting to my first guest in a moment. Hello and welcome to today's Freeman Report. It is Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman, and coming up in the first hour of today's show, I'll be asking that question. Is it possible to unite 11 million people in the UK to one idea? Lyndon Wood is my first guest. He is an entrepreneur and business consultant. And I have to say that he is an interesting guy. I've met up in the past with him to discuss the state of the world and what can be done about it. According to his ex-bio, Lyndon is a Muslim, a Christian, a Buddhist, a Hindu, an atheist, and a philosopher who has a superior being living inside of him somewhere. Now, I think what Lyndon is trying to say with that statement is that there is wisdom in most things and that you do not need to be defined by any one idea or philosophy. Then in the second part of this hour, I'll be asking how many people in the UK are genuinely transgender. Based upon data collected as part of the 2021 census, the Office for National Statistics claims there are 260,000 transgender people living in England and Wales, which equates to around a half of 1% of the adult population. But is this figure accurate? I'm not so sure, as in my lifetime, I've only ever met one transgender person. And on a purely random basis, if the 260,000 figure is accurate, it would mean roughly every 219th person you meet would be a transgender person. Now, obviously, this is a simplistic way of looking at the question, as you have to account for the bias contained in people's social circles in which they mix. However, given that I've spent more than 30 years as an adult, I've been to university, I've travelled, I've had lots of different careers, and I've lived in many different parts of England and Wales, you would think that I would have met more than one transgender person. However, backing up for a second, another question, and probably where I probably should have started, is why is this important in the first place? And on that question, I have a much clearer answer. Because if the number of transgender people is only a tiny fraction of 1% of the population, why the hell are the legacy media and our politicians devoting so much time promoting the idea and suggesting that we need to change our society? Why are laws being changed and the language being rewritten in the name of inclusivity? Changes that are being made that impact all the rest of the population and in many ways in a very negative direction. Like calling breastfeeding chest feeding and therefore taking the mother out of the equation, or creating rules that allow grown men to enter women's toilets and changing rooms, or destroying women's sports by allowing biological men to compete. Now, that last one is one of the most ridiculous things that I've seen take place in recent years. And that is saying something, given that there's so many ridiculous things going on in the world. I mean, Why did we create women's sports categories in the first place? Why don't we just get rid of the categories altogether? Why not just do that? Now, clearly, the answer to that question is very obvious. So obvious that it really irks me why are there so many cretins that say biological men competing in women's sport is okay. It's fair because, well, they just identify as women. So yes, it does matter how many people we are talking about, given the damage that has been done and is being done to many aspects of our culture. So should we believe those figures published by the ONS? Well, Michael Biggs, who is Associate Professor in Sociology at the University of Oxford, thinks not. Professor Biggs says the question used to collect the data is confusing, and he estimates that just 30% of the responses should be counted, which would put the figure at around 80,000 and a mere fraction of 1% of the population. I have to say, this is very interesting, and it is therefore why I'll be discussing the research with Sarah Newlin in the second part of this hour. If you want to get in touch to talk about anything, any of the topics on the show, email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you're enjoying all of the great shows that we've got on TNT, then please, please, please get yourself over to social media and give TNT Radio a follow, and me while you're at it. We're on all of the major platforms, including X, Facebook, Getter, Gab. I'm also on TikTok. So get over there now and help spread the word about all of the great things that TNT is doing. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, now before we go over to our first guest, I'm going to hand things over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Thank you very much, James. Well, breaking news is that the First Minister of Scotland, Hamza Youssef, leader of the SNP, is facing a no-confidence vote after his decision today to end the power-sharing arrangement with the Scottish Green Party. He's come under severe criticism and First Minister's questions today. And the Conservative leader, Tory leader Douglas Ross, will lodge the vote within the next week against the First Minister. He needs the support of at least 25 MPs. He's already got 31 Conservative colleagues in the Scottish Cabinet, so it looks like the vote will go through. And the Scottish Labour leader is now calling for an election following Hamza Youssef's decision this morning to break up effectively with the Greens, who they have been power sharing with since Nicola Sturgeon first did the Bute House agreement. Also, following up from the story that I broke on this show yesterday about the stabbing in the school in South Wales, the school remains closed today while the police carry out their investigations. And a hero teacher who restrained the teenager who stabbed two teachers and another pupil, he held her in an arm lock until the police arrived. He's today been dubbed a hero. All three were taken to hospital. They've since been discharged from hospital. Their injuries are not said to be life-threatening. And a total of four people have now been arrested in connection with immigration charges after five people, including a little girl, died while trying to cross the English Channel on Tuesday. They were on a dinghy with around 112 other people. Four people have now been arrested on immigration offences. No charges yet. The men are varying ages of 19 and early 20s, some from Sudan, some from South Sudan, and a fourth person arrested today, James.
Right. I'm going to start by talking about Hamza Youssef. Who was the Green? Because I think it was only one MSP, wasn't it, that formed part of the coalition. So my question was, is it because she was white? He was white. I guess that's the question, Gemma.
No, that's not how I understand it at all. There were two members of the Green Party that
two members. But were they white? Is that the reason?
No, that's not the reason. You're referring back to that horrendous speech. I'm sure he wishes he's now never said that, hasn't he? But of course, this is all to do with Scottish government U-turns on green policies, saying that they can't reach net zero by 2030. Now it's a 75% reduction is unachievable. They've pushed all their net zero targets to 2045. And of course, following the CAS review last week, the Scottish government said that it's only NHS clinic providing puberty blocking drugs to children questioning their gender was going to stop doing that. And the rainbow part of the Green Party in Scotland didn't like that at all. And they took to the streets to protest against both those decisions. And there was going to be a vote from the Greens whether or not they wanted to stay working with the SNP. And today, Hamza Youssef got in first and said, no, you can't break up with me and take a vote. I'm going to decide to break up with, I'm going to break up with you, effectively. And one of the questions in the press conference that he gave at 10 o'clock this morning was, you know, have you done the breaking up, Mr. Youssef? And he was like, no, I'm taking control of the situation. But he's now facing a confidence vote, which is likely to happen next week. So that remains to what we see there, how that vote goes, and whether we do see a snap general election in Scotland. Many just saying that one minute he's backing the Greens, next minute he's breaking up with the Greens, that he's weak, ineffectual leader. All the failings of Scotland now lie with him and he should go. So that might be what we see, James. It might be what we see.
I doubt it very much. I should imagine his SNP colleagues will back him, even if they don't like him, because I think having an election at the moment with all of these shenanigans going on with Nicola Sturgeon and her husband, you know, they're not very popular in Scotland at the moment, the SNP. So I think the timing of this will mean that they will vote to back him, whatever, even if they don't necessarily like him very much. Interesting that we've seen four arrested after these deaths in the English Channel. Really, really interesting that, because so they can arrest people, they can find people, some of these smugglers. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen any charges yet. But the implication is they've arrested these people because they're part of the operation getting people across. So if they can do that, why does it take deaths in the English Channel for them to actually arrest anyone? Why are they not doing that anyway? That's the question I've got.
That's a very good question. There's a quote somewhere, if I just look into my notes. Here we go. The Deputy Director of Investigations for the National Crime Agency has said, this is why the tragic incident demonstrates the threat to life posed by the crossings and brings into focus why it's so important to target these criminal gangs. Of course, the question is, why not earlier? Maybe it's because in this instance there are deaths, so it's treated more seriously. Bringing sailing in that part of the world is not illegal. You know, even if you're bringing in hundreds of people, it's not. Being out on the water isn't necessarily. Well, I'd have to double check that. But it's a big shipping channel. There's plenty of traffic out there. Maybe it does take literally legally deaths for an investigation to be carried out, and that's why arrests are made. I'm not sure, but we do know details of.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, but it. I'm not a legal expert, but I'm assuming that it must be illegal to run an operation charging people to get them into a country illegally. So I don't think, you know, and obviously when you've got 40 young men all packed into a dinghy heading for England, I think it's fairly obvious they're not out there fishing or for the day out. So, I mean, my question is, and of course, you know, this is not the first time we've seen deaths in the Channel either. We've seen many incidents across the past few years. So I guess my question stands, you know, if it's possible to arrest people suddenly because we've seen four deaths, why are those arrests not been taking place before now? It really does, I think, show up the authorities. I mean, maybe this has got something to do with France. I don't know. But, you know, what do we pay our security services for, if not to keep our borders safe? We don't know who these people are coming across the border, whether they pose a security risk to the country. So, yeah, I mean, that is the question, I think, that for me and this whole story is, why are they not doing this before? Gemma, I am going to move on. So we've got a packed show for the next hour, but I look forward to seeing you again in the second hour of the show for some more breaking news. Right. OK, so we're going to take a short break now. When we come back, my first guest is Lyndon Wood. He is an entrepreneur and business consultant. I have chewed the fat many times with Lyndon. We've gone to lunch in Cardiff to discuss the state of the world and what could be done. So my first question to him is going to be, can we unite enough people in the UK? Could we rather unite enough people under one idea to actually change things here? Is that possible? So stay where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Rick Munn.
The US have provided assurances to prevent Julian Assange's appeal against extradition. So the death penalty will not be imposed, they said, but WikiLeaks founder's wife, Stella Assange, said he will not be afforded First Amendment protections. So last month, two judges deferred a decision on whether Assange, who is trying to avoid being prosecuted in the US on espionage charges, clearly relating to the publication of thousands of classified documents that they say endanger life and so on and so forth. So bottom line is here, the US government have said, pinky promise, we won't put him to death when he gets there. Yeah, that's a little bit like if a crocodile could talk or a great white could talk and you're on a surfboard and you're thinking of going into the ocean for a little dip and he said, don't worry, I won't bite.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
Right, now my next guest actually lives not that far from me in Cardiff. We have met up for lunch before to chew the fat and ask how we sort out the world's problems. He is Lyndon Wood. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Lyndon.
Hi, James. How are you?
I am very, very good, actually. We were just saying, we need to meet up again, don't we? Because we haven't solved the problems that the world have got at the moment. So I think a lunch or an early dinner is in order.
It's well overdue. So when we first met, I think a few years ago, we've not progressed much since, have we? But you're doing the radio show and I'm doing my Twitter or X or whatever they call it these days.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the last time we met was, I think, on the tail end of the lockdowns. Things were looking pretty bad there. I would say since then, although, I think the number of threats has probably increased. We've got the WHO now. We've got the climate change nonsense. There's many more things on the horizon now. However, I think since then, there's definitely more people waking up, and that is the answer to all of this. I think, if we can wake up enough people, then I think that will solve the problem. So my first question to you, Lyndon, I think, yeah, I saw a post on X from you, which suggested it takes 20% of a population to overthrow a law or to change a rule. So that equates, in terms of the adult population in the UK, to about 11 million people. Do you think ever possible that we could do that under one idea?
Yeah, I think when, if you take the egos out of the organizations that have set up, and I've tried to sort of look at a couple of organizations that are pushing for change and to make sure dystopian laws and rules do not come into effect. They just seem to be, they have their own ego and they want to be in control. If these organizations just killed the ego off a little bit and joined forces, then I'm sure we can get to several million people pushing the front there.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think as well, because there are organisations out there that are not, they're not running for office, they're not political, because once you get into politics, you tend to get dragged down into the weeds. The Together Declaration would be one that pops to mind. But I think the problem with a lot of these organisations, yeah, is they're trying to fight so many issues that it's very, very difficult to capture everybody, isn't it? So I think if we were to do this, it would have to be under one idea. And I'm not quite sure what that idea would be. Have you got any thoughts on that, Lyndon?
Yeah, I mean, my view, James, is they need to operate almost like a political party without having the restrictions of a political party. And you'll know all too well that political parties can't advertise certain things, can't do leaflet drops at certain times, and the rest of it. They need to operate like a political party, but not be a political party. Are you with me? So they need to have their own policies written and target 3, 4, maximum 5 topics, not try to take on the whole ideology that we're facing ourselves with today. because you just get a cluster of noise and no real focus. And when you divide your capital, money, and your human capital, people, it gets diluted and then the message gets lost.
What about though setting up, rather than it being sort of you coming to a conclusion about certain policies and things, what about an idea, and I think Iceland might have done this very, very recently after the banking crash, about having a national conversation where we set up boards up and down the country from people, from society, where we kind of all get together and decide what the hell we want to do, because things are broken, right? I think most people, I think we could get 11 million people in the UK to agree that things are broken at the moment. But I think the problem is once you start proposing ideas, then everyone's got different ideas, haven't they?
Well, people have busy lives, and what they don't take into account is it's great having a busy life, work, kids, and all the other good stuff. But you have to protect the future, not just for yourself, but for your children as well. And somehow an organization has to create the network effect. So you can look at the telephone was the original network effect. You've got one, you speak to a friend, therefore I want a phone as well. Facebook or Meta now was the other network effect. There's many examples of network effects. And to create a network effect, you have to develop a community and a strong community, which sometimes can sound a bit of a cliche, but to develop a strong community that back a message or a mission does involve, as you suggest, meetings, board meetings, groups around the country. But actually, they all need to be coordinated, because if they're not, things get diluted very rapidly. I've seen it happen. And then the whole thing just falls apart.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that we would be up against if we tried to do that would be obviously the powers that be. And they've got many, many tools, haven't they, Lyndon, in terms of stopping us uniting. I mean, you know, one of them that I've heard you speaking about very, very recently is attacking our identity. Explain that, what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, identity is who you are, where you're from, what you do, your comforts. So your home, et cetera, your personality. And to attack an identity, and I think everybody who's listening will associate with this, then you make people isolated. You attack, you gaslight them. We've seen that happen. You indoctrinate them. So let's talk about, you know, the vaccine is indoctrination. You indoctrinate them into the all of the LGBTQ and BLM and all these kind of things. You humiliate people. I got humiliated. I tried to go into a restaurant during that time and got turned away because I wasn't vaccinated. And boy, did I kick off in front of 40 other customers there. But, you know, it made me feel completely discriminated against and surveillance and control. So, and we've seen all of these come into play. And when you destroy, and culture, and because when you destroy the culture and implement these mechanisms, it's a psyop. It's a psychological game, a game for them, but not so much for us. It's unethical and it's very harmful. It's harmful long term. So, you know, touching on the isolation topic, you've got the lockdowns. They were isolation. So when you're aware of your identity being trying to destroyed and sort of killed off, it means the people in power get to control you much easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, you don't wake up one morning and think, oh, my identity's gone. That doesn't happen. But you feel unstable. You feel a bit insecure. You feel, I've met a lot of people are depressed. I'm sure you've met people as well through this period, you know, who are depressed. It's because their identity's been stolen. It's been killed off. They become easier to control.
Yeah, that's a very, really interesting idea. I mean, maybe that's the way that you corral everybody under one idea. It's about they're trying to take our identity, because I think that is very, very clear when you look. I mean, one of the topics of conversation later this hour, Lyndon, is about the number of transgender people in the UK. I mean, the ONS says it's 260,000 people. But a professor now at Oxford University has said, no, it's a fraction of that. You've been making mistakes in terms of collecting the data. The question you have to ask is if the number is a fraction of just 1%, why Why are we seeing so much activity? Why are we seeing so many attacks on our culture, on our way of life, in order to include what is a very, very small number of the UK population?
Yeah. Again, it's going back on the identity. It's to destroy your identity and who you are. So it's making you second question everything you believed in. And then someone comes along in a power seat, could be government, could be someone who influences your opinions, and you become more susceptible, it's almost like hypnosis, more susceptible to what they want. And they can change your belief system. So they can. And I've researched this, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not any of that, but it just makes sense. And when something makes sense, you have to follow it. It almost doesn't matter who it comes from, it could be your arch enemy. If it makes sense what they're saying, then it makes sense.
And of course, Lyndon, you know, if they can break up sort of large identity groups, then what they're essentially doing is just dispersing everyone, aren't they? So they're ensuring that there's not enough of us talking about the same thing, uniting on a particular topic. It's much easier to control. It's the old divide and conquer trick, isn't it?
Yeah, no, correct. I think I read something back a while ago, back in the, I can't remember, 14, 1500s, some king decided to close all the sweet shops because coffee shops, because people were gathering in coffee shops and chatting about what they hate about the king and the government. And look what's happened to us as a global society. Look what happened. They closed businesses, the coffee shops shut, we had to stay at home and it's the same tactics. They just repeated.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was one of the things we were talking about during the lockdowns. People around here anyway, was they wanted to close the pubs. They didn't want people discussing what was going on and coming to, oh, you think that as well, do you? Oh, right. Okay. And you think that as well. They didn't want any of that. You're absolutely right. What they wanted is people to be isolated so that they were easier to control. Now, Lyndon, we're just going to take a quick break for the news headlines. Yeah, sure. When we come back, I want to talk about something that you have got an awful lot of knowledge on, and that is the economy, its business. We're going to talk about that because, like me, I think you believe there is a financial crash coming. So let's talk all about that and also what people can do to try and protect their wealth if that actually happens. So stay where you are, Lyndon. Okay. We'll be back in right a second right here on TNT.
And now...
Dude, I have huge news.
I knew it!
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. 18 of Donald Trump's allies have been indicted by a grand jury in Arizona for legally challenging the results of the 2020 election. The bishop stabbed in last week's alleged terrorist attack in Sydney has weighed in on the censorship war brewing in Australia. And as protests erupt across America demanding an end to the war in Gaza, demonstrators have swarmed the residence of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, now, Lyndon, I've been talking about the fact that I think a crash is coming now for what seems like forever. It's about 2 years now. It doesn't seem to come, but all the indicators that suggest there's going to be a crash just keep on getting worse and worse and worse. You know, we've got the lots of bubbles in the property markets, in stock markets. There's lots of banks underwater in the US, but nothing seems to happen. What do you think is going on?
Well, if you look at the dollar and you look at their 35 trillion of debt, it's a recipe for disaster because the interest they're paying on that, I think the number was like a trillion every quarter or something. And that can't go on for, you know, much longer. However, I do feel it might go on until they print 50 trillion, 50 trillion, which could be until about 2027. Maybe 28, before the dollar ultimately has a big collapse. Now, what we've got to realize is it's an election year. So in election years, they have to talk everything up. And talk creates stock market rallies and stock markets to climb. And we only saw yesterday earning calls where I think it was Meta made a 10% more profit than expected, but the share price dropped. And then Tesla didn't make the profit, but the share price climbed. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. It absolutely doesn't make sense. But that's the world we're in. We're in a bizarre world. And when you follow the money that perhaps goes through to Ukraine, and more recently, $60 odd billion again, that gets given back around to America in military contracts.
Yeah. Of course it does. And it, of course, it creates GDP as well, because, you know, a lot of the military aid, well, what America have been doing is, and Europe have been doing this as well, is giving Ukraine all of our crappy old munitions and tanks, all the stuff that actually is no good to us really anymore, so that we can start building and paying for more. And we just heard yesterday from the UK Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, that the UK is going to increase its defence budget.
I mean, look, these contracts, this money going out to these countries that is floating back around into contracts just creates a false economy. So job creation, great, you know, a GDP, great. Yep, but it's doing it with your own money. It's almost money laundering. Some people will call it money laundering, but it's going back around the circle. And it gives a false economy. We're in an election year. What will be really interesting, maybe for all the wrong reasons, is what will happen in 2025. So elections have happened, however that turns out. I think there's going to be riots no matter which side it goes. What will happen in 2025? Because elections are done. What's really going to come through then? And people do need to protect their finances and their future, because they may not have jobs.
Yeah, they definitely do. Now, when you say 2025, that's interesting, Lyndon. I hope you're right, by the way, because at the moment, you, like me, you know, you dabble in different things. I buy a bit of gold. I don't keep it in my house, if you're watching. But, you know, I buy a bit of gold. I invest a little bit of money in crypto. And, you know, these markets at the moment, I mean, gold has been reaching all-time highs. But the crypto market is very, very interesting at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, like I'm a heavy investor in crypto, and I'm a heavy investor in gold and property assets. I sold my company back in 21. So I manage my own capital since. I don't give it to a third party company. I actually manage it. So it's in my interest to look at these markets, look at how the financial world and economies work in order to navigate my own wealth creation and protect the money and the assets I have. And I came from nothing, James. I mean, you probably know some of the story, but I was sleeping in a car at 18. I started my company at 19. I sold it 32 years later, sort of 2.5, almost 3 years ago. And then I managed my own capital. So I know what it's like not be able to pay, you know, your electric bill and your phone bill and so on, you know? So it's just important that people do something with their money and don't just be a wage slave for a fixed income. Because if you're not protecting your income and wealth, at some point in the future, your job will go and you're left with nothing because your savings are being stolen right now. You don't see it, you don't understand it. But I tell you now, if you look at your savings in your bank, you've probably got a lot less now than you did 2, 3, 4 years ago. It's been stolen.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, they call it a cost of living crisis, but it's not, is it, Lyndon? This is a transfer of wealth crisis, because that's what happens when you see inflation skyrocketing like this, particularly when it's all fueled by money printing. Because, you know, the rich and powerful, they're all buying assets with that cheap money which they got on that printed money. And of course, what we're seeing now is inflation. And that's where how you preserve your wealth, isn't it? It's assets.
Absolutely, assets and real world assets. So you can do property, although it's not liquid, as in you can't get hands on the cash when you want it. And there's other methods to achieve protection over your money. Gold is obviously one. And I do believe it's a good time for gold if you're not into the crypto world. And not everybody is. In fact, most people are still not. So gold is a good protection asset right now. And commodities are your everyday thing. So things like, and this isn't advice, not allowed to give advice, just tell you what I do. So it'd be like oil. Oil is a commodity. Sugar is a commodity. Things that you need every day. They tend to be good markets during war times, during recessions, certainly during depressions. But the most important thing is, do something. Don't do nothing.
Yeah. And Lyndon, do you worry about particularly the crypto markets, in the sense that, You know, if you've got a bit of gold, you know, if you've got it in a vault somewhere and you actually invest in physical gold rather than just a contract of gold, then you've actually got a physical asset. Unless someone steals and physically takes that away, it's always going to be there. The problem with crypto, or the worry, I think, with crypto, not necessarily the problem, is that, you know, we hear about all of these threats with cyber attacks, the internet being shut down. Do you worry about that at all?
No, I don't worry about it. Look, it's a digital asset, you know, Bitcoin. And where people get really stung are on the meme coins, the sort of the coins that have no utility, no real world use. So you have to buy the king, for example, buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, this kind of thing. Because when you buy the king, you don't really go wrong long term. Gold is king. You know, buy gold, keep it 5, 10, 20, 30 years for life. You just won't go wrong with it. And that's proven over 5,000 years, you know? So gold is certainly an option outside of crypto. I don't worry about crypto being stolen. I keep my crypto in a hard wallet. So off the exchanges, which are actually middlemen, I keep it off the exchanges. Look, it's a bit fidgety and it's not everybody's cup of tea because it's fidgety. And you sort of get one thing wrong and your Bitcoin's in the cloud somewhere. So you have to be mindful of that. If you're not that technology okay, then stick with stock, shares, commodities, gold. If you've got some money, buy some property, you know, that kind of thing. Because during war times, during down times, all these things, you know, can protect you.
They can. And I think the golden rule, actually, with investment is do not put all your eggs in one basket. That is the golden rule. So if you've got a bit of money, spread it about across different, get a bit of gold, a bit of crypto, and a bit of property if you've got that money to invest. Lyndon, thank you so much. It's been long overdue, you coming on the Freeman Report. Yeah. We'll have to catch up. We were talking in the break just a minute ago. We'll have to grab that pint and something to eat next week and see if we can solve the world's problems again. Lyndon Wood, ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, James.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to be talking all about those ONS figures, 260,000 transgender people in England and Wales. Are they correct? Well, a professor at Oxford University says, no, they're not. So we're going to be talking all about that in just a moment right here on TNT.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee and thought I'll top up with fuel. Ordered a coffee, but while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve. Healing, nurturing, rescuing, protecting, inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. The Nonprofit Alliance.
The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. So to discuss those ONS figures on the number of transgender people in England, Wales, I'm delighted to be welcoming back writer and social commentator Sarah Newlam. Welcome back to the Freeman Report, Sarah.
Hi, James. Good to be back. Thank you.
So, Sarah, what do you let's start at the beginning, I guess. Does it matter how many transgender people there are in the UK?
Well, that depends whether you sort of believe that transgender is a thing, I suppose. I mean, we've certainly, with the CAST report and everything, we've seen that the trans child is certainly a questionable notion. And I think I personally, you know, it's not a, as far as I'm concerned, being trans is not a particularly tangible thing. You know, it's a state of mind, as far as I'm concerned. I know that I'll have some of the trans people jumping up and down a bit, but it's not a, you know, it's not a sort of quantifiable thing, is it? You know, it's something they do to themselves, something they choose and do to themselves. So in that sense, I don't think it does matter. So I don't think it was really something to, for data to be collected on it for the census. I think it was a bit of a mad thing to put in there, really. But then again, I think collecting census data in general is a bit of a wrong idea. So,
yeah, but you're absolutely right, Sarah. It is something that you do. It's not something that you are. Absolutely. So let's talk about those figures, because the ONS has, since 2021 census, it collected these figures, 260,000 people, it estimates, which I did a few calculations this morning. And if you strip out under 18s, that works out roughly around 0.5% of the adult population. But there's new research out, isn't there? Tell us about this research, Sarah.
Well, it seems to be suggesting that basically the way they worded the question was frankly, you know, but they made a bit of an arse of it. And lots of people seem not to have understood the question very well, which makes the data completely skewed, if relevant at all, really. And I think when I was reading through it earlier, it seemed that some people thought that if they had already answered the question of whether they were male or female, that they didn't need to answer this question. But some of them thought that they still did. So they were recorded as having been both. So they were in both categories of being both either male or female and trans, or the other way around. So I think they just made a complete hash of it. So I really don't think any of the data can be relied upon. I don't think it can be used in any reasonable way at all.
Yeah, because I guess when you think about it, I mean, the ONS didn't give a definition of what being trans is. I mean, is it just, I think I might be the opposite sex, or
exactly.
Is it?
Exactly. I mean, it's completely self-reporting, isn't it? Which,
yeah,
it's not, as I said, it's not really something that's quantifiable in that sense. I mean, you might as well ask, if you ask the question, do you like perming your hair? You know, in the 1980s, you'd have got a very different answer than you would in 2021, you know? So I think it's, a lot of the people that did answer in the affirmative were probably people that are just sort of being a bit trendy. I mean, you know, we've seen all these students who think that they're trans, and how many of them would actually take it through to surgical procedures and things is sketchy. So yeah, it didn't, I don't think, as far as I can make out, it didn't even sort of split the data there. It wasn't, you know, have you had, you know, sex changing surgery, or so these, a lot of these people that answered in the first place were probably just people that are going through a bit of a phase at best.
And it's a difficult question, because as we've already discussed, it's not a thing, it's something that you do. So what actually qualifies you as transgender? Do you have to have gone to the doctor and actually been diagnosed as being transgender? Do you have to have actually started on the drugs? So I think the Office for National Statistics has got his knickers in a bit of a twist on this, haven't they?
I think it really has. Yeah. And I think anyway, now, you know, as we were talking about before with the CAS report, I think all of this now is it has to be seen as somewhat sketchy in the first place. And, you know, lots of people now are rowing back, aren't they, on their sort of stance. I think, what was that MP's name? I forget her name. Got it somewhere. Dawn Butler, I think it was.
Yes.
She sort of stood up and berated the CAS report initially, but now she's rowing back and saying that she made a mistake and misled the House. And I think, yeah, I think lots of people are doing the same. I think the bubble has burst, as I wrote about, and I think hopefully a bit more sense is coming into this. And maybe looking back in years to come, when they look back at the 2021 census, I'm sure people will think it was a bit of a mad idea to include that in there, you know.
Yeah, I do think it was a bit mad at ONS. I mean, I was I was obviously working in ONS prior to 2019. And I remember there was a report at the time flying around the office that had actually been written up that was talking about the difference between sex and gender, because they knew, obviously they were preparing for the census. And the office didn't know what to do. Like a lot of organizations, they were really fearful putting the report out for all the criticism they would have got. And I think they've just ended up, like I said, getting their knickers in a bit of a twist with this. And of course, today, you're right, the bubble has burst because we've seen Hamza Youssef actually breaking up the coalition with the Green Party because of all of this. Because
that's right.
In Scotland, they banned puberty blockers like they have in England as well. So hopefully, Sarah, this is the start of the end for this madness that's been taking place over the past few years.
We can only hope so, James. I mean, you know, as you say, when you were at the ONS and they were talking about that, who did they ask for definitions? Did they, you know, and who were the experts? This is another issue with this, isn't it? I know that Susie Green, that awful woman who transed her own son, she was CEO of Mermaids, I think, at the time, and they were using Mermaids as some kind of expert in all this. Well, she didn't have any medical qualifications, or, you know, it all ran a bit mad, I think, and I think it's run off the rails, really, hasn't it? So her name now, I think most people realize that she was somewhat of a lunatic, and she was left rampant to give expert advice. I think she even consulted, she was the main consultant for the ITV drama Butterfly, which I've also written about, which is an appalling piece of propaganda in trying to make out that the trans child is an actual thing. That was released back in 2018, and she was the consultant on it. And it's just full of all this nonsense that they wanted everybody to believe and not question, you know, that not question at all. And I think she was the sort of level, she seems to have been the level of quality that they've used as expert. And I think it's been appalling, and it's led to such terrible things.
It is. And I'm hoping that the UK is going to lead on this globally now, because, I mean, we've still got really awful things happening. Like in Australia, I had somebody on the show, Billboard Chris was on the show a couple of weeks ago, because he criticized the UN because they've appointed this trans, and I always get confused with it, like, but it's a trans woman, or it might be the other way around, I forget. But anyway, they've appointed this trans person with no qualifications in health, who's been posting about bestiality and taking drugs on sex and all of this, posting this stuff publicly. This person has been put in charge of giving health advice by the UN to other vulnerable transgender people. And just shocking, absolutely shocking.
It's absolutely outrageous, James. And I think, you know, that's exactly point in hand there, that so much of this is wrapped in pornographic fetish behavior. And no matter how many times they try to debunk that, the trans people try to debunk that, you only have to scratch the surface and you find it's totally, you know, it's actually completely covered in this stuff. Every person that seems to be appointed turns out to, you know, I think there was one Sophie something he calls himself, but he was an artist. And he came to the UK. He spoke to children in a library in Sheffield. Sophie LaBelle, I think he calls himself. And his social media is full of nappy fetish art. He has a nappy fetish. And it's appalling that these people should be anywhere near our kids, let alone teaching them anything, you know, supposedly teaching them anything.
I mean, the thing is, I'm sure like me, Sarah, I'm pretty liberal. I don't care. I mean, if somebody wants to have a nappy fetish, that's fine. And I'm not going to discriminate against people. I'm not going to target people. But it's, you know, and people can get on and do what they want. I really don't care. I just want to get on with my own life. The reason, you know, because there'll be some people, I'm sure, that watch this or hear this type of conversation and just think we're bullying people. But we're not, are we? Because, you know, what we're saying is, fine, get on with whatever you want. But, you know, I don't want you teaching this stuff to my children. Yeah. I don't want us all, the rest of us, to be told that we've got to pretend that this is all okay.
And that it's normal, you know.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's the other thing, James, is that none of this should be public. You know, I've, as you say, I'm quite a liberal person. I have no problem with anybody's sexual preferences, sexual fetishes. But it used to be that something that people practiced in private, you know, as long as it's consenting people, consenting adults, I've no problem. But, you know, like this whole thing of everything being out in the open and it's acceptable to talk about in mainstream conversation, it's there's no dignity anymore. It just seems, you know.
And of course, when you bring children into it, it becomes grooming, essentially, doesn't it? It's definitely grooming. Right. I'm going to move the conversation on, Sarah, because there's something else I want to talk about, which is actually close to my heart. Susanna Reid from Good Morning Britain has posted, they put a video up, Good Morning Britain have, saying, with Susanna Reid saying, we really failed our children during lockdown. What do you make of that?
Oh, this is so galling, James, so galling. You know, she was one of the sort of biggest proponents of calling for lockdowns. She was all the way through, as I remember, her and Piers Morgan, and you know, they had some appalling views and sort of slating people who wouldn't get the vaccine and slating people who broke lockdown rules. While most of us, people like you and me, were sort of writing and I was putting out so much material at that time about the damage this would do to children. They were just going along with it and didn't see any, I don't think I even remember them thinking about kids in any respect. You couldn't get airtime for that kind of view for love nor money. So it's very, very galling to see her now pretending that she in some way cares about what's going on, you know.
And it really does irk me, because me and my wife, we've had a couple of conversations over the past few months, but we've realised actually, and I don't know why I didn't notice it before, but my teenage son, before the pandemic, he used to go to Scouts. He used to go to a boxing club near us. And he used to go out of the house and socialise and do all those things. I think the lockdowns and all of the nonsense that came along with that all happened at quite a critical time for him. He was sort of 13, 14 years old. And now, you know, after all the clubs and everything were closed down for the best part of 2 years, he's just not re-engaged with that. And now he does all of his socializing via computer games and stuff. And, you know, I can't force him. I mean, he's like 15 years old now. I can't force him to go to clubs and these clubs. So it has had an impact on him. And I'm sure there must be millions of other children that it's affected their social upbringing, their socialising.
100%, James. I mean, my daughter, she sounds like she's a couple of years older than your son. But I saw at the time when the school closed and we were all stuck at home with both me and my husband working at home and my daughter trying to do school at home. It was awful time, and she became quite depressed, really. She missed her friends terribly. She's an only child, so she missed her friends. And I think, you know, the impact, especially, again, often poorer children as well who lived in high rises. I had such a terrible feeling about those kids who would be shoved in didn't see the light of day sometimes, you know. And for them to not have highlighted any of that and now to be backtracking on it, and the damage has been absolutely appalling. And like you say, your son is one of many. I have an older niece as well who's, she didn't go to university because of it. You know, she turned down a university place because she didn't want to go when it was all still learning online and you don't get that proper university experience. So many young people and children and their social development has been completely stunted. And, you know, I really hope your son can get back some of that confidence and get out there again, because, hopefully in the next couple of years when he's a little bit older.
He'll be okay, because he's got two good parents behind him, and he's a great lad. I mean, it really is quite, you know. And in the news, all we're hearing is, exam grades are not going to be what they were previously until 2030. I think that's the story that they're talking about. But who gives a crap So exactly. I'm sorry, but, you know, in the big scheme of things, I don't give a monkey's about that, because what's the purpose of life? I want my kids to be happy first.
Exactly.
You know, I don't give a monkey's what the...
You know, you want their social life, you know, other people. That's it, isn't it? Humans connecting with each other. That's the main thing. And I think, it's just... Oh, I wanted to...
But we have run out of time, sadly, Sarah. But listen, you're obviously a regular on the Freeman Report, so please do come back again soon.
Of course.
Thank you very much, Sarah Take Newland, care, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Right, okay, that's not it. Well, that's it for this hour, but I'll be back in a moment, so don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.